Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Thanks for listening today, everybody. We have a little men's health and a little women's health to do now. Let's see, it's a little after 11 o'clock, and I'm sure a lot of you out there have gone through or maybe are currently going through your morning beauty regimen. That means shampooing your hair, smearing on creams, lotions, soaps, deodorants, lipsticks. It's just your mundane daily routine, but how much do you stop and think about what's in that stuff? What are you putting on your face? What are you putting in your eyes, all over your body? We assume what we use on our bodies is safe, but in fact, the cosmetics industry is largely unregulated in this country, and the FDA has little power to act, even if some products are found to be dangerous, to contain mercury, formaldehyde, even lead. But now there's a big legislative push to change that, and major personal care product companies are signing on, the major ones are, while little ones are opposed and fear they may be driven out. With us now is Rachel Abrams, reporter for the New York Times. She recently co-authored an investigative piece with Eric Lipton entitled "Their Hair Fell Out, Should the FDA Have the Power to Act?" Hi, Rachel. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
And with Rachel, we have Assistant General Counsel Tina Sigurdsson from the Environmental Working Group, a nonprofit dedicated to protecting human health and the environment. Tina, welcome to WNYC.
Good morning. Thank you.
So, Rachel, what's the current relationship, as you reported on it, between the FDA and companies that produce cosmetics in this country?
Well, it's been a really long slog, and I think that up until recently, there wasn't much consensus about how to really well regulate the industry. And what we've seen in the past year or so is we've seen the really big players, the Johnson & Johnsons, the Procter & Gambles, the multi-billion-dollar companies that make so much of what's in our bathrooms, we've seen them reach an agreement over one major piece of legislation that has the backing of Senator Dianne Feinstein and others to give the FDA more power. And this was seen as a really big victory both for the health and environmental groups and also for the industry. And so what's happened in the past, and more recently than that, around the same time, some of the smaller players decided that they could not get on board with that, that the regulations would be too onerous. And so the cosmetics industry right now has splintered. And you've got two groups backing different pieces of legislation. The other one is widely seen. It was introduced by or sponsored by Pete Sessions. And that's widely seen as being much weaker and not giving the FDA the power it needs. And so right now there's basically sort of a divide among the industry groups about how best to tackle this issue.
Tina, for you as a public health lawyer, what's your main priority here?
Our main priority is protecting consumers and protecting families. A lot of people aren't aware that this term cosmetic actually covers products used by the entire family from birth to death, baby wipes, shampoo, deodorant, body wash, conditioner. The average woman uses 12 products a day. The average man uses 6. So our goal here is to have consumers protected not only from short-term injuries, but also from long-term exposures to chemicals of concern that we don't know enough about, carcinogens, endocrine disruptors, things like that.
So some of the ingredients which have been found in cosmetics products, mercury, lead, formaldehyde, Tina, do they show up on the labels on, you know, the back of the shampoo bottle or whatever?
In some cases, risky ingredients will. In other cases, they won't. When they don't, they should be there, and FDA does have authority to act. But also, the portion of FDA that works on cosmetics is very small and very underfunded, and that's why we need to pass the Personal Care Product Safety Act so that FDA has both the resources and the tools that it needs to protect consumers.
So, Rachel, in your Times article entitled "Their Hair Fell Out, Should the FDA Have the Power to Act?" you focused on the high-end hair care product called WEN, W-E-N, which, by the way, I always thought was a wart or a cyst, not exactly a name I associate with a beauty product. But here's an ad for WEN with a bunch of celebrities, Alyssa Milano, Ming-Na, Holly Robinson, Pete Rosalind Sanchez, which aired in 2013.
Shampoos and conditioners, so yesterday. You want to have beautiful hair, you have to try WEN.
Just try WEN one time, and you're going to see a difference in your hair.
I will never go back to shampoo. Never, never, never. I'm a WEN girl.
But here's a Chicago hairdresser named Judy Santiago telling WGN-TV in Chicago that she had to tell one of her clients that she was losing her hair this past January.
It was the exact size of a thumbprint, and it was like balled down to the scalp, so it's not like it broke off.
So the company received more than 21,000 complaints from people who said that the product made their hair fall out, and yet they were not required to give any of that information to the FDA, Food and Drug Administration. Is that what you found, Rachel?
Yeah, I mean, I think people don't really understand that companies are under very little obligation to report problems with their products. I mean, even if somebody dies from a cosmetic product, that company, that manufacturer, has no obligation to report that to the federal government. And I don't really think most people understand that. So what some folks are trying to do, what the Feinstein bill deals with, is trying to get the companies to be required to report adverse effects, basically problems with the products within a certain amount of time. So for serious problems, serious adverse health effects, the companies would be required to report them within 15 days to the FDA and would be required to make an annual report of all adverse effects, obviously every year. So I think that's sort of seen as something that seems kind of basic by a lot of health and environmental advocates.
So, Tina, this Feinstein-Collins bill, Dianne Feinstein, Susan Collins, co-sponsors, a Democrat and a Republican in the Senate, has actually won the endorsement of the industry heavyweights, including Estee Lauder, Johnson & Johnson, the maker of Neutrogena and Aveeno, and Procter & Gamble, whose brands includes Pantene, Head & Shoulders, Herbal Essence, and Olay. But then there are these other smaller companies like Mary Kay Cosmetics, speaking for small business owners, who are saying, we don't want this. This is going to put us at a competitive disadvantage because we can't comply with this. Do you understand, Tina, the split in the industry, and what would you say to the smaller manufacturers?
You know, that's a great question. I would say that the time for reform is long overdue. The tools that are proposed in the Personal Care Product Safety Act are both reasonable and necessary. And, you know, I think there just needs to be a little more education and outreach to small businesses about the various ways that the bill does consider them and about what this would mean for them. Because we're talking about an industry that's gone largely unregulated for 80 years. So, of course, the prospect of regulation might seem a little bit daunting to some folks. And that's why we're hoping to see a hearing in Congress. We're hoping to see a hearing in the Senate. Be great to talk about the bill, talk about these issues, and raise greater awareness about what it actually does.
Rachel, how do you understand the smaller company's argument? Is it economically prohibitive for a smaller cosmetics company to tell people if there's formaldehyde in the shampoo or whatever else the Feinstein-Collins bill would do?
For the smaller companies, the biggest concern that they have is they don't want a patchwork of state regulations. They want any kind of federal legislation to say, hey, our rule is the rule, and you can't do anything different on the state or the local level. Because what their concern is that and the majors share this concern as well, but the smaller manufacturers are super concerned that it's going to be difficult for them to comply with a bunch of different sets of regulations. And if you don't expressly prohibit that, that's going to be a problem. And so the legislation backed by the smaller manufacturers has more tight provisions to prevent that from happening because the smaller guys just don't have the infrastructure in place to hire a bunch of lawyers, spend millions and millions of dollars on R&D, research and development to really, you know, tackle more than just sort of one broad set of regulations.
Well, if it's a federal bill, if it's a federal law that might emerge from this, why wouldn't that establish one national set of regulations and they wouldn't have that problem?
I think the idea is that because under the Feinstein proposal, that proposes that the FDA look at five chemicals of concern every year. So the first five they would tackle, a couple of them are formaldehyde preservatives and things that people have been really concerned about. But if I'm not mistaken, and maybe Tina can address this too, there's a little bit more wiggle room for states to kind of look at or other chemicals before the FDA might have a chance to get to them. And so I think that that is an area of concern for some companies.
Tina, more on that?
Yeah, I would contrast the Personal Care Product Safety Act, where there would be a review of five ingredients a year, and then some compromise on the preemption issue, with the House bill. In the House bill, there would be no ingredients reviewed by FDA whatsoever. In fact, the bill would actually rubber stamp many, many ingredients as safe without adequate information, and then go ahead and preempt state action. So, I mean, it's shocking to be able to say this. We're talking about an outdated 1938 law, but the House bill would actually make things worse than current law because it wouldn't really reform regulation of cosmetics, and then it would prevent states from acting to protect their citizens. So, I mean, I think that the Personal Care Product Safety Act is a great bipartisan compromise bill, and we just need to have a hearing to talk more about it.
Let's take a phone call. Claire in Yorkville, you're on WNYC. Hi, Claire.
Oh, yes, hi there. I was just thinking that I wanted to make a contribution because I was in the pharmaceutical industry for 30 years in various aspects of what they call safety.
Mm-hmm.
And in my experience, a lot of the adverse events, of course, we were regulated by the FDA, but we got a lot of what they call anecdotal reports. So, for example, with regard to the hair loss, you know, hair loss is a consequence of aging for the normal population. So unless there's like a controlled blind clinical study done about that, you really cannot determine if somebody who's calling you reporting this loss, whether it was really caused by the drug. In addition, in my experience, there are groups of attorneys, class action lawsuits, who actually go and recruit, put big ads out there. Have you been damaged by product X? Join our group. So that really, you know, makes a lot of companies worried about what they're putting out, and that's kind of related to why many medications are expensive, because they have to participate in these lawsuits where they would rather just pay off somebody than going through all the effort of having to prove every case.
With your experience, what's the solution?
I think it's good. I was only listening a little bit, but, you know, once again, they were talking about the five chemicals that need to be identified and researched. I mean, I actually have a friend at Mount Sinai who's working on, oh, I can't think of the name of the word, but it's these little chemicals.
Microbeads?
No, those are actually physical things. This is, it's a chemical, related to a scent. And so, in other words, there's a huge amount of research going on, but it takes time to figure out, you know, first of all, maybe what happens in 1 year, but then a lifetime of experience. You know, that's sort of an epidemiological problem.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, I'm in favor of it, really, but it's a very, very
right.
expensive proposition.
Right, the difficulty of doing those prospective, as they call them, public health studies over decades to see what the actual impact of these products or these additives into the products are. So let's finish on that point. Rachel, is that part of the bill? I mean, if they're going to look at five chemicals a year, if they pass this Feinstein-Collins bill, well, for how long do they need to study a chemical in a cosmetic before they determine scientifically that it's the cause of anybody's health problems?
I think, you know, it's really interesting that you ask that, because I think that the FDA is also sort of tackling that issue too, because you have to look at both acute effects, stuff that's going to happen in the short term, right, and then also maybe the less well understood long-term effects, stuff that could be harmful to development and to other sort of maybe early stage growth. And so that stuff is a little bit harder to measure, and maybe it takes a little bit longer. And I think the FDA is trying to figure out how to kind of address both short-term and long-term problems.
Tina, last word on the same question?
Yes, I really think the Personal Care Product Safety Act and needed cosmetic reform is just about getting more information from companies, gathering the information they already have on the safety of their ingredients. And, you know, as your caller raised the point of class action lawsuits, it was only EWG doing investigations in the fall where we found in class action litigation documents that Guthy Ranker, the maker of Wendt, had received 17,000 complaints. And in that same period of time, FDA has only received 127. So if we have a situation where the company is getting 21,000 complaints now and FDA is only getting 127. We have a broken system, and we have companies that need to come forward with more information about complaints and about the safety of their products.
All right. We have to leave it there with Rachel Abrams, business reporter for The Times. She recently co-authored an investigative report with Eric Lipton entitled "Their Hair Fell Out, Should the FDA Have the Power to Act?" and Tina Sigurdsson, assistant general counsel from the Environmental Working Group. Thanks so much to both of you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.